And welcome to this, the July 26th, 2009 edition of Ford Forum. John Quinlan here. Today, looking forward to one of our favorite subjects. We're going to be talking throughout the hour about connecting young people in our civil rights history. And our special guests on the line are Selma historian and guide Joanne Bland, a frequent visitor to our show. And also a new friend, Milwaukee filmmaker Scott Rivera. And part of the context for this discussion is Scott's fantastic film, documentary he came out with last year called Exact Change. And although there's a lot of themes and a lot of folks, a lot of very familiar sights on that, I actually became familiar with that thanks to Charles Monroe Kane and Mary Picorni Donnellan when they were on in the context of their show, Director's Cut on Wisconsin Public TV. They had Scott as their guest this past fall and had a great time with him. And what the Exact Change is all about is basically it's the journey of 25 Milwaukee high school students going down to visit the civil rights sites of the Deep South. One of those sites, by interesting coincidence, was down in Selma. And as listeners to this show know, we have a long history of connecting with Selma, both because of my personal commitment and because the show broadcasts live from there, something that's rarely done here in local radio. We were very proud of back in August of 2006, had a 3-hour show from the National Voting Rights Museum, where Joanne Bland was then the executive director. And I have an ongoing commitment to support all the important work that she's doing and others are doing down there, and was last down in Selma in August. And then Joanne and I have had the pleasure of sharing some of the momentous occasions, both on the radio and in person, that characterized the last couple of years, including had a chance to be in Selma when Barack Obama was nominated for Democratic candidate. And then we exchanged phone calls, I think, on election night. And then in January, we got to watch that inaugural together. So very special friendship, very special relationship. Joanne Bland, welcome to Forward Forum.
Hi, John. Hi, Wisconsin.
Hey, it's good to have you here. And the other thing I think I forgot to mention, too, is you have this ongoing relationship back here in Wisconsin, too, for almost a decade now. You've been coming up to UW-Madison and through the Tradborn residence programs, other things. You've been telling that civil rights story, story of the Selma-Montgomery March, which you participated in at 11 years old. And then folks have come down your way as well, which has just been a life-changing experience.
It's been life-changing for me, too, because it gives me hope. There are times when you feel like the struggle might have been in vain, and always someone comes, and you know it's not, especially the young people.
Yeah, there's something special about the hope that's contained in young people. We've handed them over a world that's got its share of problems, but there's this optimism that's there. Do you find that in the young people you meet?
Almost definitely, but they're searching.
Yeah,
they're searching. They want to do something. They know they have to do something, and they don't necessarily know how to go about it. One question I always get when the young people come to Selma is, "What advice do you have for us now? What should we do? If I knew that, it would already be done. You wouldn't have to struggle at all."
Yeah,
and the answer lies within them, and I try to instill in them that they know the answers. They just hadn't realized them yet. We've gotten this far.
Well, you know,
how far will you take us?
And sometimes that struggle, at least on the surface, is a bit of a difficult one. We'll bring Scott Rivera into this conversation in just a second. But one of the scenes that's depicted in his film, Exact Change, and I got such a kick out of this because I've heard you tell so many variations on this story with other young people, is there's this young man named Sam. And, you know, you had all the young people, they'd been riding all night, you know, coming down from Wisconsin, and they'd been to Atlanta already, and they were, you know, a lot of them were kind of dragging. But you wanted to say, hey, this is important stuff. This deserves your attention. And this young man, he was just kind of disinterested, kind of falling off to the side. He was sitting down when everybody else was standing up. And you sought him out, as you often do. Can you relate kind of how the story went from there?
Well, one thing is, we can't afford to lose anyone.
Yeah.
And I truly, truly believe that it's very, very important that our young people know where we've been. That in order to take us where we need to go, because they have to be the ones that are going to take us. So you really, really have to get their attention while they're here. And I'm a Southern grandmother. And I don't know if you're familiar with Southern grandmothers.
Oh, yes. I had one for many years.
Say anything, do anything. And never stand right in front of me and act disinterested. No, not right in front of me. And I just went right into my Southern grandmother role. It just ticked me off. And he had such an interesting face, such a nice-looking man, young man, and in particular, African-American.
Yeah.
And they're dying in alarming numbers. Now, I can't afford to lose anybody, so I'm trying to get his attention and save this young man.
I'm going to let Scott pick. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm going to let Scott pick up the story, because he was kind of a part of the next story. But, you know, what I was saying, this, for me, as your friend, it just resonates with some of the stories you told about other people who come down to the National Voting Rights Museum. But also, when you were here at Malcolm Shabazz High School about a year and a half ago, you had another young man also kind of slumped back on the bleachers and just, you know,
feigning
disinterest. You remember that one?
On the first row, and I rolled up on him too.
You just sort of slowly eased over his way.
The top, he was following me and leaning over. I thought he was gonna fall off and trying to follow my every move.
Absolutely. Hey, Scott Rivera, welcome to Forward Forum.
Hello, John. Hello, Joanne.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Very good. Nice to hear your voice, and great to be on the air with you, John.
Well, it was really good to have you here, and it was just such a wonderful discovery, and to hear about all the great work you're doing, Scott. So we're going to get into you know, more the uplifting part of all of this, but you know, as Scott knows, this was something that the folks at Director's Cut here at Wisconsin Public TV were just really interested in, this interaction that kind of characterized some of the growth, some of the change that some of the young people went through. So Scott, again, the young man is back there, and Joanne is just finally saying, well, hey, if you're going to feel that way about it, it's time to go back to the bus. And after that, you sort of stepped out of the role of filmmaker into the other role you had there, which was chaperone, big brother. Could you take the story up from there?
Well, I just knew that I was in a special place, and I had been looking forward to this myself, you know, for weeks, that we were going to be you know, stepping into these footsteps again, or stepping in into Selma. So when I saw that this young man was not going to have the opportunity to hear the, you know, the pinnacle pieces of Joanne's you know, advice and information and experience, I had to step into the filmmaker role and move this kid into, you know, back in the right direction. That's where it was for me.
No, that's great.
And so you engaged him in conversation on the bus and just kind of talked things through with him?
Sure. I followed him back to the bus and let him know that, Sam, this is not an opportunity that you want to miss. You need to go back there, do whatever it takes to join us on on our march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and be a part of this. Because I know if I hadn't stepped in there, he probably would have stayed on the bus and kept his hard head, and he would have regretted missing that chance.
So he went back to the group, and Joanne was telling one of the landmark stories that she tells young people about the stones, and we'll get to that in just a second. But Joanne, you saw him approach the group, and do you recall how it went from there?
I demanded an apology.
Exactly.
He needed to apologize. He just wasn't going to walk back and say, after I've gone off on you, then that's discipline without consequence. And if you're disciplined, you have to have consequence. One of the things I find with, and it's not to say anything against Northern mothers, they seem to be more liberal than we with their children than we are down south. I mean, we got a bunch of them here, too, don't get me wrong. I didn't grow up like that, and I don't think I turned out so bad. I raised my son the same way. I'm raising my granddaughter the same way. And while it might not work for everyone, it works well for me, that respect is gone, and we're going to have to get it back. And that's one of the things that the children crave. Crave limits, and people don't think they do. You know, the more you let them do, the more they want to do. But there has to be a clear line between the generations, because when you start to disrespect the generations, we start to lose our people. And he did fine. He was such a loving child. he wasn't a bad child at all. I remember him afterwards just attentive and respectful. But you know what it also did, John and Steve, was to get the other children's attention. I didn't have a problem the rest of the day with anybody.
Interesting. Anyway, from what you tell me, you know, I mean, there's always one or two that happens to, and that's kind of the way that it just all plays out, right?
And sometimes they're just collateral damage.
Yeah.
In order to do a large group, and my average group is anywhere from 40 to 60, and sometimes 100, but in order to be able to control a large group, you have to get their attention and keep it.
Yeah.
And keep it. So once I go off on somebody, you know, I don't have a problem because they don't want it to be them next.
Absolutely. Hey, well, just in case folks are just joining us again, this is Forward Forum here on WTDUI, 1670 AM. And we're speaking with Soma historian, tour guide, the co-founder of the National Voting Rights Museum, Joanne Bland. She is now involved with a special project called Journeys for the Soul, and links to that information and also to the film that we're going to be talking about, which is Milwaukee-based filmmaker Scott Rivera's film called Exact Change. All of that stuff is up at our blog. Just go to forwardforum.net, or if you remember the longer address, it's forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. I've got extensive links up there, including some of Joanne's past appearances on this show, including that live broadcast from Soma back about 2.5 years ago, and almost 3 years ago now. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, as I was telling folks, about the time that all of this was playing itself out, and just one footnote on this that Scott can maybe pick up on later, but it sounds like this young man, Sam, was also one of the people really took in deeply the meaning of being in these places where Dr. King was. And actually, Scott, maybe I will let you tell that. I know when the tour wound up in Memphis in a chapel where Dr. King had preached his last sermon before his assassination the next day, Sam lingered. Can you reflect on what that meant for him?
Boy, John, that was a moment that, yes, it was great for me to be in the Mason Temple and to be in that historic moment, but even more powerful was to be there watching this young man, his reflection, his change. I mean, it was so powerful to see exactly what I had hoped to happen, was to witness the light kind of turn on for one of the participants in the trip. And to witness that with no one else in the room or, you know, in the temple, and to soak it all in myself, just, you know, I just felt so fortunate. And I felt so fortunate for him that, you know, that he's going to remember that again forever. That will be one of the shining moments of his life. And
oh, that is so powerful.
And
that's
again,
I try to do.
Yeah.
We have to get them to that place, and because if we don't, we're lost. I can't think of any other way to explain it. If we don't, we're lost. They have to be the ones to connect and see that this is what it's about. This is where we've been. Don't let us go back. You know, and it's their duty to make sure that we don't. That is so powerful. I would have killed to have been there.
Scott, does that resonate with you? Is that part of what motivates you to do this work?
Well, you know, I guess I feel that same kind of inner struggle or you know, frustration that Joanne's talking about what do we do now? You know, the civil rights movement, you can look at a you know, as a journey to a new place, and if that journey was so hard and so long and took the efforts of so many people.
Yes.
You land on the shore of the new, you know, of your new destination, and what do we do now? And I think that you know, myself, and I think definitely generation, you know, of the past 20, 15 years have been looking for, you know, what do we do now in this new land?
Exactly.
How do we start? Where do we develop? What direction do we go? And
that's why I think your piece is so important. to get out, for children, young people to see it, for whole people to see it, because everybody's so disconnected. We've bought into having these supposed freedoms that we don't really have. And a little girl told me from North Carolina that they don't have, she had, you know, they don't have prejudice in North Carolina anymore. They've
really
grown way above that. I went into grandma mode. I won't tell you what I said. I said, because that's a dangerous statement.
Yeah.
When they don't recognize discrimination and stuff that's still going on, how can they get rid of it? And they're going to have to be the one to get rid of. We have the same thing with new names. And I think your piece should be in every school in America.
Thanks, Joanne. I'll do my best.
Please.
Well, it's got, you know, Joanne's kind of bringing up an interesting topic, and this might have been different for those Milwaukee youth. I know at the beginning of your documentary, rather than saying, hey, not in our town, this isn't in Milwaukee, I think they, perhaps from the get-go, had some sense that Milwaukee, in some ways, is the Selma of the North, which was the title of a panel. Yeah. but is that the case? Did they make those connections fairly easily?
Well, I think this tour was unique in that the participants needed to, one, know about it, two, sign up, or qualify, I should say. So they needed to do some research. They had to have a bit of a sense of racial relations already. So these were a little, the brighter side of the group. So I don't think they was too naive. I don't think they were too naive in their their journey. I think that though they didn't expect, even some of the most kids with the most wherewithal could, in our week's trip, recognize points when they felt like, hey, we're not in Milwaukee. We're different, and we're out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so, that comes through at some points in the documentary. And so.
Well, before we get further into the discussion, I do want to share with our audience a couple of sound clips from the documentary. And these are sort of in the middle of the film. It's a point where I think one of the first nights where folks are having a chance to discuss some of what they've seen. They've also just been presented with some of the more graphic images of that Selma to Montgomery march. I encourage folks to, again, travel back to our website at forward.net to find the links to the blog and listen to some of Joanne's narratives. I won't ask her to go through that today, but she presents this incredibly compelling testimony about what happened on Bloody Sunday and the subsequent triumphant march that occurred out of that. Just to set this up again, the young people had just seen some of these photos. They were reacting to some of what Joanne had said. We're going to start with some of the young women and some of their reactions.
So when your great-great-grandchildren come to see them, they can hold that history in their hands.
And Joanne, that was you. So we're going to kind of backtrack to the young people just a second. What have I got here? Yes. Had it queued up the first time. And there we go.
But if you take it back to me.
Not still wants to do that. So just one second. You never have technical problems in any of the work that you do you, Scott?
Oh, never.
Okay.
Never.
Well, I assumed as much, yeah.
Usually it's right when the film is going to play before 100 people.
That's about it. Well, this one wants to play itself out again. Well, actually, I think what I will do, I'm just going to reverse course, and I think I'm going to let this play out again. This is the story of the stones that Joanne was explaining to folks.
Get up off your behind and do something. If it ain't number, throw that rock at them. Is that clear?
And now we're at the end of that. But, hey, we'll get there eventually. Okay, now our clip is played out. We can do that. And again, this is some of the young women reacting to what they've seen and heard in those first couple of days.
We don't want to see a black man beating on another black man. So we saw it as, like, putting this person down, and also, like, in the other picture, as, like, it was very degrading and another word was used was hatred. Hatred against another person for really no reason at all. Well, it's a reason, but it's a very stupid reason.
I think we all had a pretty overwhelming feeling of determination, hope, and unity coming from this picture. And how even though it's raining and they all have their struggles, they're coming together and they're unifying and they look happy.
Emotionally, they weren't as strong because I know if I was back there, I probably would have been dead. I wouldn't walking across that bridge no second time after that first time.
Right.
It was a wrap, you know. But it shows like the struggle, you know, that they really have to go through. Cause now it's like, even if a person look at you wrong, it's like a fight. You know, they don't even have to touch you. Right. So,
I never knew nothing about Bully Sunday at all. I never knew about this march. I never knew that none of this ever happened. I was born in Milwaukee, but my mother's side is from Tyler, Texas, and my father's side from Mississippi. So I grew up in the South. So it was just crazy because, like, what if it never happened? And what if, like, my mom met my dad in Mississippi or something, and I was born down there? And what if I was one of the kids who had to go to jail for their parents and stuff? Like, it was just shocking. Like, I was so shocked. I couldn't talk about nothing. I just saw everything. I was just, like, still, like, even now, it's just, like, just shaking because it's crazy that it just happened a little while ago, and then you can still, like, see the pieces and pick up the pieces nowadays. It's nuts.
Again, we're hearing from young people who participated in this great documentary, Scott Rivera's 2008 documentary called Exact Change. Go to our blog, forwardformexchange.blogspot.com. You'll find links where you can go to a VEOH site, VEOH.com, where free of charge you can watch this remarkable 66-minute documentary. Joanne, you know, one thing strikes me about some of the reactions here and in a clip we're going to hear after the break is, you know, as much as it was powerful for young people to imagine what it was like to be there, in some ways, I think it was hard for them to imagine themselves being courageous enough, having enough perseverance, having enough patience to follow the nonviolent ways. Yet, you know, when I talk to you, what impresses me is that there were so many so-called ordinary people who probably didn't see it in themselves to have these extraordinary qualities. And yet that's what was the foundation for this whole movement.
Right. Most women were fought by ordinary people. The people who write our history deem to give up a few heroes and sheroes, I should say. And they play up one part and not the other. Dr. King may have been here seven times out of this whole period. Yet when you hear, you read anything about this movement, it seems like he was here every day orchestrating things. You know, he played the general's role. But that's not true. This movement was fought by ordinary people just like themselves. And I try to instill that, you know, on my journeys, that you're just as strong. It's just that same bravery, as you would call it. I don't tend to think brave about it. I was born during a time that just happened to be 44 years later. We're sitting here talking about it, but Our children don't understand that. They have no connection to that. So you really have to connect. I think that's why my journeys are important, too. They go on it, and they get the history from someone who was there. And I think that's very important, that they hear my stories as a young person who didn't do anything particularly brave. I was there.
Yeah.
And it happened. So, and they always ask me how does it feel to be a hero or a shero? I don't feel like a hero. I'm not a hero. I was there. You would have done the same thing if you had been here, without a doubt. In the senses of giving violence back, would have been instilled in them too. They would have known it was fruitless to fight back, that the way that it was done was the only way it could have been done.
Absolutely. All right, we need to take a break, but just want to punctuate, and we'll remind me to do this throughout the rest of the hour. We want folks to know about this great project that you are a part of called Journeys for the Soul. It's very similar to what Scott experienced, what a lot of the UW-Madison students have experienced. It's a chance to spend several hours visiting these sites, but hearing firsthand the history, and then putting yourself in the shoes of those folks. That's an important aspect I want to explore a little bit more with Scott and see how that played itself out with the young people, as they came back to Milwaukee. But Journey for the Soul, in the singular, journeyforthesoul.com, is that your website?
Right.
And again, we got that link up at the Forward Forum blog, and you can find out more about the opportunity down in Selma to be part of this great history. And as we mentioned, Joanne also comes north quite often to Madison, to Milwaukee. Tentatively speaking, I think we're thinking maybe the end of February is next time we're going to get you up here.
Right.
And we got to get you up here in the summertime. You know, just no...
I'd love to see it one time in the summertime when there's no snow.
We're going to make it happen. But it's all part of a relationship. What I hope will happen here in Madison is a great relationship that a number of folks at the university, including Scott Seaforth and my friend Suzeski and many others, have cultivated, spread more and more to the greater community. Joanne had a chance to speak to Malcolm Shabazz High School this last time. But if you're a youth leader, if you're part of a school district and you would like to share this again, you know, please get in touch and we'll make sure that you're in touch with Joanne about this valuable experience. And welcome back to Forward Forum. This is John Quinlan. Very special guests on the line. We have Selma historian, tour guide, veteran of the Selma to Montgomery March when she was 11 years old, already having been arrested 13 times. Joanne Bland on the line from Selma, Alabama, and also from his home over in Milwaukee, filmmaker Scott Rivera. We're talking in part about Scott's remarkable film, Exact Change. Also, great exchange, cultural exchange that's happened over the years between Madison and Selma, more generally, I think, Wisconsin and Selma. Exact Change was in part a project of the Nehemiah Project, I know, which Joanne has been a part of. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah,
that's correct.
And so many opportunities Joanne's had then to go and speak to those groups. Scott, I just want to give you a chance. If folks want to find out more about Exact Change, and it is a documentary, in addition to this chance to see it on the internet, if folks want to use it for educational purposes, is it available for sale as a DVD as well?
It is available for sale. I've got a very small website where you can purchase a copy of it on DVD. Right now it's priced more at schools rather than individuals. Schools of Education, that is. But there's a link to my email from there, and if you want to negotiate, I'm more than willing. Just real quick, though, John, the whole documentary thing is always built around time, and seeing some change, part of the reason for the title. And I've been a little reluctant to blast that documentary out to schools. Wanted to give it a little time to let other filmmakers see it and make some comments, suggestions on ways to make it a little more impactful.
Uh-huh.
And I would consider the past year that it's had a chance to simmer a bit. I've received some incredible feedback, suggestions that people make, people I respect very much as filmmakers. They have some insights or questions that I can help answer in another edit. But I'm always amazed at what people pick out of that film that I think are just in there to fill time and are, the fact that you chose those quotes of the girls looking at the photographs, for me personally, that's one of those scenes that I can't even believe it's in there still.
Uh-huh.
But then, it's really amazing what people pick out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, for me, what the chord is struck was, and we'll hear this in just a second when we play some young men reflecting on this, is, you know, first of all, they got both how difficult it was, but they just also admired this courage. But they really hard time putting themselves in the shoes. And I mean, maybe Scott, before we go into this clip, you can comment on that. I mean, it seemed to me that part of what you all were doing through the educational presentations and everything is to say, hey, extraordinary times are still with us. We still need to speak out. We still need to, you know, to take risks. And there's good stuff that can come of that. Is that part of what you're trying to instill in the young people?
Yeah, without a doubt, that this is now your ball to carry. Will be your responsibility. As Jim Wayne always says, she can't afford to lose. We can't afford to lose. You know, people involved or interested or moving the struggle forward. And yeah, on the tour, each night after spending a day going to museums and visiting sites, we often spent about 2 hours of reflection time where the group would just gather in the lobby of the hotel and, you know, real free form of discussion. You know, we'd start with what the day had, you know, some of the lessons that we taught or had learned, but wow, where the students took it from there was just amazing. And if it's the clip that I think you're going to play, this was one of the ones for me which was just really stands out. It's so poignant and exactly what the tour is supposed to be and exactly what, you know,
And to set it up briefly, I think this is self-evident, but it's essentially a discussion about nonviolence. Could I have done what these people did? Several young men commenting on that, including Sam, the young man we were talking about earlier.
That comes from us bottling up a lot of things. Like, bottling up with, like, say, the KKK or whatever did something to somebody's family, and they bottle it up and they don't do nothing, and then another black person brings it up, like, oh, you should have did this and you should have did that. And then there's a heated argument about, oh, you can't tell me what I should have did, and da-da-da. And words is exchanged and fishes is thrown. That's basically how everything starts, even nowadays.
Like, was that Martin Luther King when he was coming out the church or somewhere and the lady stabbed him and he didn't do nothing, he kept walking off? I couldn't have did that. I'd have beat the mess out that lady.
Exactly. I can't be... Even nowadays, I can't be around nobody that's not going to defend themselves if something happens.
Because, like, if I'm hanging out with him and we leave from a basketball game and I'm getting beat up and he telling me, turn her the cheek, and he ain't doing
that
nothing.
Sounds dumb.
I'm going to beat him up after I get
exactly.
done with
him. That's just how it is. That's like saying you coming out of Mayfair or something and you see some people you don't like or whatever. Yeah, you going to try to keep walking at first. But if they come over there and they just start beating you up and your old friend or your cousin just sitting there like, dang, just walk away.
When I think about, like, black people acting out, I don't know why I'm even brought this up, but it's something I always thought about. Like, when we were slaves, I don't know how to explain it. It's right in my head, but I don't think it's going to come out of my mouth right. I couldn't live nowhere in any type of point of time but this, because I don't think I would have lasted all that long.
Because,
like, if I was a slave, it would have been over from there.
They would have had to kill me. Right,
even if they was trying to get me from Africa, it would have been over from there. They would have had to kill me. They would have killed me if I was a slave. They was going to kill me in the Depression. They were definitely going to kill me back with Martin Luther King.
And once again, we're listening to clips from the documentary Exact Change. And Scott Rivera, the filmmaker, is on the phone from Milwaukee. Also, Joanne Bland, who happened to be featured in this documentary as part of a tour she was giving to young people down in Selma, is joining us. As we mentioned, Joanne also with a long history connection here in Wisconsin. Scott Rivera and Joanne, I know you have comments on this, too. The whole subject of nonviolent resistance and how it is and isn't relevant to people today, especially young people, is just fascinating. But just initial responses, Scott, to what you heard those young people saying?
Boy, you know, I completely understand with what they're saying. The pressure to, you know, to be the top dog and to, you know, not be pushed around is incredible. I've got an 8-year-old son who's going to start heading into the tough times, and I can't imagine what pressure is going to be like for him, you know, going through school and life and things. So,
you know,
we do our best to teach nonviolence.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
a way to resolve conflict. But
go ahead, Joanne.
You know, it's not easy to connect that nonviolence phase to today. The children just really don't get that. Man, I would have. You know, and when those of us who were there know that, no, you wouldn't have. But there was also a whole faction of people who didn't believe in turning that other cheek.
Yeah.
And they acted out. And I think it took all those elements, not just the nonviolence, but I think it took the violence too, because sometimes the only way to get your attention is to do that. I don't advocate violence in any way, but how young people should also understand that there was violence.
Yes.
On both sides, not just on the side of the segregationists, but on our side too.
Well, I think there's incredible lessons in here for white allies who, again, you know, yes, we should embrace nonviolence and look at what this has accomplished in so many struggles in so many places in the world, but it's a much more complicated reality than that. We have to realize
right.
that and what people were up against, what the ferocity of Jim Crow violence and humiliation and rape and murder and intimidation were all about. To those folks who did respond in different ways, there shouldn't be a judgment there by any means. You know, we need to understand the complexity of all of that, and also understand, you know, black nationalist leaders also, in addition to advocating for violent resistance, also advocated for nonviolent methods, and Dr. King also advocated for a variety of different responses. So we've oversimplified and sanitized that history. Again,
right.
You know, and what that means is we're discounting the violence that people were reacting to in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly. Today we know that, and I truly believe this in my heart, and Wisconsin, please don't get angry at me, we will never, ever have another nonviolent revolution.
Mm.
You know, it's going to be much deeper than that. I think, one, our children have been exposed to more in less than 20 years than I've done in 55.
Yeah,
I've seen it 55, so it wouldn't work now. It worked then, but hopefully, as as America becomes more and more educated and on affairs and how to treat people, we can get away from some of that, and we can come to the table, put it on the table, discuss it, and come up with solutions rather than have to go through with what we went through in the 60s.
Absolutely. I mean, just in understanding the complexity of that doesn't diminish the power of what happened. You know, one of the first things I remember from visiting you down in August of 2006, you know, and since then having the chance to examine the civil rights movement in more detail at the university and other places. But I remember you told a story that just really threw me off, because I went into this, again, this naive white liberal guy thinking, hey, this is all totally about nonviolence. And, you know, and so, you know, these were noble people who just, you know, were incapable of anything else. You told the story of an older black woman who was in a confrontation with, I think, the sheriff there. Do you remember
yes.
what I'm talking about?
Yes, Annie Cooper.
Yeah.
Mrs. Cooper, the sheriff, was famous for grabbing women, as most cowards would. There's this scene where he grabs Mrs. Boynton and roughs her up in front of the cameras. But one day at the courthouse, Mrs. Cooper, who was 52 years old at the time, he grabbed her and hit her. And she whooped his butt. I mean, she beat him good.
Well, you told that story with such relish, and I thought, my goodness, what's
yeah,
going on?
Yeah, because
but
the children love those stories.
this is a bully getting his.
So they're like, you know, ain't no way in the world I would have let them hit me without hitting. I would have died first, right?
And this is someone that no one would have guessed could stand up in that way, turning the tables on the guy. And so, hey, that's a part,
exactly.
that's a part of it, too.
Exactly, I'm 5'2" of her, and he's about 6'3".
Yeah.
But the most important part of that story was that I asked Ms. Cooper in later years, Ms. Cooper, why did you hit that sheriff? And she simply said, he hit me.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so powerful that he hit her, she hit him back. And that's a natural response. That if someone hurts you, you try to hurt them back.
You know, and it's resonant, I think, with the themes of this week, too. Just for us, sometimes folks, again, not to put everybody in the same box, but folks that haven't necessarily faced this kind of oppression, think, why are you living in the past? Why are you living in this history? History is alive. It still resonates. And so if a black man is harassed or feels he's being harassed by a policeman, that doesn't just take place in the here and now.
Exactly. I can't stand that when people say, oh, that was then and this is now, you know. Well, the same things are still happening now. So until we get rid of all this craziness, you have to remind people what it looks like, what it is. That's another reason I think his speech is so important, and we don't have enough of people like him to go out and really capture the essence of this and how it transforms our children. Our children are not bad. They're just searching.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not surprised, but time is flying by. We got to take another break before we finish up our last segment here. But just to remind folks, we're speaking with Joanne Bland on the phone from down in Selma, historian, veteran of the Selma to Montgomery Civil Rights March. And also joining us from Milwaukee is filmmaker Scott Rivera. And he came up with a film last year that, very interestingly enough, is still a work in progress, apparently. It's called Exact Change, and it chronicles the journey of 25 young people down to the civil rights sites of the South, what they learned along the way. Back with Ford Forum in just a moment. And John Quinlan here with Forward Forum, our very special guests, Selma historian, tour guide, veteran of the Selma to Montgomery March, Joanne Bland on the line from down at Selma, and Milwaukee filmmaker Scott Rivera. Scott's 2008 documentary, Exact Change, can be viewed at the VO.com website. All of these links up at forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. I want to play one more clip, folks, and then we'll give you each a chance for some final remarks. This was something, a remarkable show that we did about a year and a half ago featuring many of the young people from Madison that went down, and especially memorable story that was told by a young woman named Mobolaji Folomo. Mobolaji is originally from Nigeria. Her folks came to the States. She's gone to school here, planning to be a doctor at the UW-Madison. But especially remarkable for her as someone who used to pass by the places where slaves were kept before sent to the New World, talking about an experience and learning about the nature of slavery down in Selma.
Knew about slavery, but never really had a connection to it. And from that day on, I felt like I was part of that history. And yes, this happened. And there was a picture at the museum that really touched me, and I still have it till today. And it's the picture of a black man with, oh God. Okay, it's the picture of a black man with all these bruises and slashes and blood on his back, but yet you see a torn American flag and his arms are stretched and he's pulling it together. And that just made me feel like, even with all that, those group of people who went through slavery, the African American slaves, really did help and strongly help build this country.
Mm.
And that is something that I think about a lot. You know, when a lot of people say, oh, February, yeah, you think about the slave rights movement and Martin Luther King and all this stuff. But I have that on my computer to remind me every day of the privilege that I have.
Mm.
And I still have my stone, and it's on the desk in my room. And I just, I mean, I don't want to cry. But that was one of the strong and most profound moment that I had. And even looking at the shackles that people were used to bind people and just looking at the pictures, like after I had walked through it, going and then looking at the pictures of the people who actually experienced it, like even though most of them were paintings, it was still horrific to see. Because it's just, that could have been me if I was born a little bit earlier.
Just by the grace of God.
Just by the grace of God. And the thing is, probably my forefathers and relatives probably did go through that because I'm originally from Nigeria. And I just, like, then I got to talking to my parents, and then they were telling me about the different places in Nigeria that you would go and you would see handprints of slaves who had been locked up in cement and buildings, and just you see their body formed, melted into the cement, and you realize that people who loved other ones, who loved their loved ones, went through this. And you think about the mothers in the ship who's lost their babies or who were just clinched together all as one and didn't have room to breathe. And I'm very, very grateful for the Selma experience, and I feel like everyone should go through it, and it was a tremendous experience.
And we were blessed throughout that show to hear from several other people who changed their careers, changed their life courses because of the experience in Selma. Scott Rivera, I don't know if you've heard any resonance with some of the young people, but I know that you have remarked that you wouldn't be surprised someday to see some of these young people in elected office, in positions of leadership. You have a sense of where that Selma journey in some way, direct or indirect, might lead some of these young people?
As you mentioned, I definitely see at least two of the kids that I'm more familiar with, or that I should say kept in contact with, moving toward becoming community leaders, maybe not through the traditional government sense, but definitely in community building programs aimed toward youth, you know, kids just a few years younger than them. They're making such a difference in swinging people in the right direction, taking education, making education a priority, and taking hold of their own neighborhoods. So, without a doubt.
We're at our 3-minute warning, and just Scott, just want to get a sense of where your path is, and what future projects you might have, what things you'd like to do.
Well, you know, I haven't had another look at civil rights or race relations or, you know, social peace come at me. Right now I'm focused on putting together an indie rock program from one of the local clubs here in Milwaukee. So that's taking up a bunch of my time here. But otherwise I keep busy with film projects, you know, working in film and video production here in Milwaukee in southeastern Wisconsin.
And you've already said it, but you do hope that Exact Change will change over time there's still more audiences that need to see it. Is that right?
Yeah. I'd like to have a little more of an ending on it, and to, like you say, follow up with some of the students that were on the tour, and be able to ask them how that experience has either changed their life or, you know, stays with them.
And Joanne Bland, what are your hopes in terms of things? Actually, one project we should mention, you mentioned a woman, Amelia Boynton Robinson, now I believe 97, someone who led the march in some ways, presented the demands in Montgomery, and marvelous woman. Everyone should read more about. But her home was in disrepair, and now I think you're making efforts to restore it as a historical site.
Yes, in fact. I'm proud to tell you that we've just been able to purchase the house. And now, by the help of a wonderful group of Unitarians, and you're familiar with the Unitarians, and they've always been involved in civil rights as long as I can remember, in the early days of the civil rights movement. And they bought the house. And we're in the process of renovating it now. We've run up into a few snags, but look, we've got this. What's going to happen? I hope, Scott, that you do follow up with the kids to find out what they're doing now and what happened, because the main thing is to help us grow, help them grow into leaders, and solve the problems that they know we have. Also, I'd be remiss if I didn't invite Wisconsin down to Selma.
Absolutely. On that note, I need to say thank you to you both. Journeys for the Soul is the place to find Joanne online. Exact Change Film for Scott Rivera.